Welcome to the Honeycomb Podcast, the podcast all about New Zealand food and drink and the people that make it happen. I'm Asher Boot, your host and owner of the ramen shop Hillside, Daisies and Bowl. Taking care of all the technical stuff is producer Steve Cochran of Rockpool Productions. In this episode, we speak to Nate Smith of Gravity Fishing, who fishes in the pristine waters of the bottom of the South Island. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us today.
Yeah, no worries, man.
So you're giving the Emerging Leader Award for Sustainable Fisheries from Fisheries NZ. Do you think that's a sign that people are listening more about independent fisheries?
Yeah, I think so, man. Yeah, it was interesting to be involved with. You know, it's not really my jam and I kind of just, you know, want to do my thing, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, still very humbling and grateful to have that award presented because it's good for business, man. And it gives us a whole nother audience as well. But, you know, we touched on some real topics while we're in there, man. You know, I got Troy to come along with me. You know, obviously it was here in Wellington. So Troy and I went together and we got sat at the table with Ray Smith from MPI, the head honcho there. Really awesome guy. We chatted to Damien O'Connor for Minister of Agriculture. And then obviously Stuart Nash, the Minister of Fisheries. And the chat was about how proud and happy they were that they were feeding 50 million people.
Mm.
And our chat was, well, you know, what about the guys at the bottom that are, you know, what about let's feed our 5 million,
yeah.
Let's feed 5 million, you know.
Absolutely.
Let's focus on that because really we shouldn't have shortage of food resource in our country. We're surrounded by it, you know.
It's utterly crazy in a country that export so much to have any form of food insecurity.
Yeah.
And lack of knowledge of the food that's here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it blows me away. And the thing I don't get about it is we have this huge tourism market. Well, not at the moment, but, you know, tourism's a big part of what we do. Yeah, they're coming to the country and seeing New Zealanders not eating it. That's got to be having an effect on the product elsewhere, no?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it. You start to ask the questions, man. Like, why is it not available to you guys here?
Yeah.
You know, my understanding or my way of thinking about it is, sure, economic turnover is good and it's, you know, it's good for the country and all the rest of it. But if we focused on feeding and educating our own people first and then went to the rest of the world, then that would be a good way to go about it.
Well, surely that's a more long-term prosperity.
Yeah.
Socially and economically.
Yeah, exactly, man. Yeah. We kind of rolled in there and we didn't really know what to expect, but then we seen where the conversations were going and, you know, we're in a room for sustainable seafood awards, mm-hmm. you know, and we go in there and it's mainly aquaculture.
Yeah.
And the two fishers that are in there, that one of, you know, four or five, six artisanal fishers that are in the country right now.
Yeah.
And we were in there sort of voicing what we are struggling with, you know, to try and get them to understand, and they were open to it, which is awesome. But, you know, at the same time, their answer to sustainable fishing and fish in general in our country is, unfortunately, aquaculture.
Mm.
It's fin fish farming. They're pouring millions of dollars into infrastructure, and that's what the future of fishing looks like because our current system that we've been governed by is not working for the wild fish stock.
Yeah.
So the answer to that is to farm it. And have we not learned from the industrialization of agriculture? We're going to go ahead and do it in the aqua scene.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to see devastating things happen there. We already do with current setups, you know. And, you know, I've had this conversation yesterday, actually. And, you know, I have my own personal opinion around aquaculture and I understand the need for it in certain spaces and things like that. And, you know, I really, really, really love and adore the green wave, you know, Bryn. He's the man. You know, we went down that route as well. Unfortunately, we didn't get it across the line and basically they took all the information that we had into the investors and they just basically give it to them with no heart and soul into it. And so that'll go tits up eventually.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't coming from a space of financial gain for us. We were doing it because we wanted to give back to it, not just to our country, but to our planet, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah, my wife Anna was amazing with that. She did so much research and pretty much figured it all out that we would be using the whole water column to try and give back. And that's what I think we should be doing. We shouldn't be farming fish. We shouldn't be farming wild fish. It's just – it's ridiculous. And that's the thing. With QMS, we kind of already have an aquaculture set up.
Yeah.
Because it is regulated to a certain extent. But – nothing's perfect, right?
Yeah.
And that's what it is. This is not a perfect system. And gravity is not a perfect system either, but it's pretty close to perfect because it's achieving what we want it to achieve. And then we're feeding our own countrymen and women.
Yeah.
And that's what we feel very proud of, you know, like it's epic. You go and engage with those people that have eaten your fish, like Sam from Moiti in Dunedin. He made a point of people come to our restaurant because they know that gravity fish is sold here and they've seen it on Country Keller. And so they had that connection.
Yep.
And that was like some pretty epic exposure straight off the bat for us. And like, I'm very grateful for that opportunity. But, you know, even with the gravity model, there will come a time, like for this year, for example, on the 1st of October, we didn't have the financial backing to fork out 60K like we do every year.
Yep.
So we're doing it a little bit different this year, whereby I know what's in season for the next few months, and we're just going to target that species because it's in season and it's when we should be targeting it, and that's all cool. So we have enough quota for that. But after that, we don't have any plans for getting more quota because we don't know how it's going to go because we're in some pretty uncertain times right now.
Yep.
But what that means is when we move into the summer months where the migratory species come over with your albacore tuna and stuff like that, those fish species are not under quota management.
Okay.
So you don't actually have to own quota for those specific fish species.
Right.
So it's basically open slather.
Yeah.
And that's what Tallies does. They make a lot of money off the albacore tuna season. And they make it very easy for fishers to get looked after in that space. So what they do is kind of dangle the carrot. And the carrot is, here's some slurry bins. Here's free ice. Mm. Here's competitive fuel rates. Here's all you've got to do is fish for us. Here's lines and hooks and setups for your boats. And they make it so simple for you to do that. But again, what kind of impact is that having on the wild fish stock if we're out there just trying to catch as much as we can because it's not under quota management? And you know, like, that's how quota got allocated in the first place. There was catch history. So how that works is, like, if I was fishing pre-quota management setup and I had a catch history of me harvesting rock lobster or me harvesting powers or something. And so when it came in, they were like, okay, Nate, we see that you've got a bit of catch history here, mate. We're going to allocate you 10 ton of powers because that's basically across the board what you harvest in the 12 months that you'd been fishing prior to quota management, and do the same with the rock lobster. And then so suddenly you've got this packet of wild resource that you now have ownership of.
Yeah.
And that's where the disconnect is. And so with that platform, they were allowed to appeal. And that what that looks like is, oh, but yeah, I wasn't fishing at the time, but if I had a boat, I could have caught 20 tons of crayfish. And they're going, oh, yeah, actually, you could have. Okay, sweet. Well, we're going to write you out some quota. So it's falsified documentation that created these TACs in the first place.
Yeah.
So they're actually, that amount of fish didn't exist, but they set the TAC, which is the total allowable catch, but it didn't actually exist, you know. And so these high TACs that we have, it's putting pressure on the fish stocks because we're trying to take something out that didn't exist in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, like, we've seen cut after cut with our blue cod management in Area 5. It started off at 1,675 tons, and it was that for a number of years. And so that was our target as fishers. This is how much we're allowed to catch, guys. Go for it.
Get that.
Get in it. And so they did, you know, and as years went on, fish stocks were being depleted.
Mm.
And I think the main thing there with that specific fish stock was our method of fishing. We got too smart with technology, and we got too efficient, and we could go and set a pot on that rock when we wanted to with the technology that we had. And if you're doing that year round and you go back to that rock and you set a pot there again and there's no fish there, it's because you've taken them the year before.
Taken it all. We had a farm at Akatea for a while, and you're seeing the cray boats and hearing those exact stories.
Yeah.
They used to be here.
Yeah. Exactly. And then, you know, it's a sad thing, man, that we're part of the problem, but we could be doing it better so that we're part of the solution, you know.
It's really interesting. I think about this sort of small fishers around the place and things like that, because we go to Scott first every time, you know, just because you get that loyalty and all that sort of stuff. But I do wonder at times, is that detrimental? Because once we've got someone, we don't maybe it's a bad habit of not looking further and seeing what else is happening and maybe comparing things a bit more to see what else is going on. Because it's like, no, I want to support that person. And you're right, there aren't great margins in hospital, so I can support this person.
Yeah.
And I want to. You know, how many do I try to support?
Yeah, exactly, man. I think it is. It really comes down to how you want to run your business and who you want to support, and that's your own business and that's choice. But I guess just having that mindset that you can champion them as well as get product from somebody else. My main point of difference there and what I'm trying to achieve with this gravity model is that we want to restore regional communities of fishers. So it should be in your best interest to support as local as you possibly can, because then that footprint is tiny and compared to me sending you guys up fish from the bottom of the South Island. Like, yeah, the fish is good and it's good product and I can get you there, get it to you like overnight kind of thing. But that's what I'm starting to realize now. And I'm like, I am a big feeling person. So when I feel that it's a little bit off, I'm like, okay, I need to address this, because if I keep doing this, it's going to make me miserable, you know? So I get it. And you do want to support people in that game. But I think the way forward is actually building your community, your food community of producers, and championing them as much as you possibly can. Because, you know, that's my part of the business, is I've got to look for those customers. And my scope now is the customers that I can drive to, because that's what feels right for me now.
Yeah.
Whereas when we first started, it was like, okay, get your name out there, try and, you know, do a good job. Let's get consistency of supply on the go. Let's get quality on the go and let's get some feedback, you know. And we did that, and it kind of got amplified and just was like, whoa, growth and expansion happened, and I'm still a one-man band, and me and my wife, you know, and we've got a young family, and it's a real juggle, man, but it's the same with every business, I guess, you know, and we run into the same issues, you know, whether it's growing tomatoes or catching fish or growing beef and lamb or whatever it is, you know. It's generally that family scene from, you know, an owner, operator, producer's perspective, is we all come up with the same challenges, which kind of brings me to the next point, is like accessibility from every aspect, whether it's access for quota for me to go fishing, access for you guys. That's a real issue within that realm. And that's kind of just the primary industry sector, man. You know, it's across the board. We're all kind of governed by the same rules. They're there to regulate it, which is all cool, but it's an issue. Accessibility is an issue.
Accessibility and knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's what's, you know, the food hui is so valuable, because you go to these things and you've got that whole like vast array of support, from scientists to dietitians to, you know, owner operated chefs and just everything. So when you go into these meetings, you learn so much and you take a lot away from it. And like truly yesterday, I felt so supported, man, you know, because of what, you know, not everybody would have pulled back like I have.
Yeah.
Other people would have just gone, I need more boats and I need more fishers, and I'm going to make a big empire and I'm going to put a big badge on it and we're going to go for it. That's not the answer.
It's not. And it, again, you're saying you feel supported, but it's so nice to hear someone else say that. I've been feeling that big time as coming through as a chef. You try to be as good as you can as a chef, then you open a restaurant, then you look to open more restaurants. That's the pathway. That's kind of what happens.
Yeah.
And there's not many sort of examples other than that, as opposed to really going, actually, why don't I do one restaurant really well, focus on it, that be my thing, look to create a business that then can be inherited and passed on, whether that's, you know, within my lineage, or, you know, a chef coming through as a head chef can then take over that restaurant, hand it down. And that way we don't get these growth sort of systems that are forever paying for themselves. Like, they virtually end up being pyramid schemes, right?
Exactly, man. Yeah, and that's, and like, I can see that, you know, I got advised to get a business advisor and everything when things started to take off. And so I went down that road, and once I understood the mentality and the nuts and bolts of it, I was like, actually, I don't want to go down this road. And for my own personal reasons of what felt right for me, but, you know, like, I still have a passion for it, you know, but I'm just trying to get it out there and show people that this is a model that has been working kind of on every front. And it needs to be out there for people to do that, you know, and that's just about education and doing what we're doing right now and showing people that it is the way forward, literally in every way, shape and form, you know. The future of fishing in New Zealand is a little bit of a wobbly subject at the moment, you know. You've got the big four, which are always going to be there, because they own so much of the wild food resource, which is pretty crazy in my opinion. I don't believe that we should have ownership of a wild food resource. It's just bizarre to me. That's why I don't own any quota.
Yep.
And kind of my business does fly on the seam of its pants in a sense that we are reliant on private quota owners to back us up and support us.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody to date does support us and will continue to support us because they understand what we're trying to achieve. And then, like, I just have these conversations with these people and bring them on board with it and get them better educated, because these people that own quota aren't necessarily from a fishing background or have anything to do with fishing. And that was kind of touched on a little bit yesterday from Troy, which was awesome because it paints the whole picture for people to understand that it is hard. You know, Fleur wanted to make a point yesterday from Meraki. She wanted to make a point that it is hard, and we kind of weren't going down that road because it seemed like it was easy. But once I have the time to sit down and educate somebody one-on-one, they do see that it is hard because they're asking the right questions, which tells me they're engaged because they want to know what it is that makes this thing tick. And, you know, I can explain it well enough so that people go away with a better understanding of how it is. But, yeah, man, it's hard. It's hard mentally, physically, you know, what isn't, you know?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the quota system, like, it's not even that old, but yet it is incredibly outdated and broken. I mean, it works for the people it works for particularly well. Are there any things within the current sort of system that you can see that can be used to support the type of thing that you're doing?
Well, absolutely, dude. The gravity model is there for everybody, and I'm finding a way round the back door, or there's a loophole there, or whatever it is. I'm under that umbrella. You know, I'm under the same umbrella as a 100-meter trawling vessel off the west coast of New Zealand, you know. Same rules, same regulations, same documentation, monthly harvest reports, global positioning reports while you're at sea, so they know where you are the whole time, so that you're not fishing in restricted zones or moratoriums or, you know, matai-tai areas, things like that, so they can monitor that. But I guess the main things that you need is access to quota, access to a boat, access to a packing facility, and then access to your customer. And with those five things, they're like pretty simple things when you speak about it, but how you go about getting that and the regs that go with every one of those five steps is you basically have to be an office dude to figure it out, man. There's a lot of red tape there, but thankfully we've had a bit of a generational change within MPI, and our field officers down home anyway do a great job, man. They do a massive job, and we're constantly talking with each other and bouncing ideas off each other, because at the end of the day, man, our generation wants change. And we see what the old model is doing and how it operates, you know, and that's what I mean before. Like, we're always going to have the big four, but slowly and surely most of the inshore fishing fleet's going to get, you know, the noose is going to get tighter and tighter each year, and that's what's happening. And what we're seeing within industry is a lot of the older guys are getting out now because they are not up to date with the digital platforms and things like that. So it's heartbreaking, man. It's a heavy thing because these guys don't know anything else but fishing. And it's very difficult for them to be like, I'm going to give up everything I know because it's gotten too hard. You know, that's really sad. It's a really heavy subject for me because I know so many older guys that I've looked up to my whole fishing career, and they're like, not in tears, but very, very upset that they have to leave what they love for something that could be so simply fixed, you know, and cater for those guys and help those guys out. But there just isn't that infrastructure.
Is there a real risk of a brain drain in that way as well, all the knowledge that these guys have?
Yeah, I think so, man. And the thing that kind of, it's cold and it's blunt, but the thing that I kind of always say is that you can have all of the quota in the world, but it's worth $0 if nobody's prepared to go and catch it.
Yeah.
If you make it so hard that fishers aren't prepared to go and catch it, then your, I use the term rental property, is worth nothing.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have tenants in your rental property, you're not making any money. It's a bad asset, you know, and that's what it is. It's a property right, and that sentence there is the disconnection. You know, everything else can be managed. That's why we're doing what we're doing. We can do it under that umbrella, and we've found a way. And that's what we want to make available for people. And it is those simple things, is to just get that infrastructure in place. And like money wise, it's not that expensive, man. You know, like I could set up something here in Wellington local for all of the fishers to use, and it would be under 20 grand. Certified packing facility under 20 grand, and you're good to go. And then suddenly your whole community is going to support that because it's right here in your backyard.
Yeah.
Everybody wins, man. And the fishery wins as well.
Mm.
Because the tight-knit connection that we have from start user to end user with the Gravity model, it means I can ring you and go, yeah, hey, dude, I've just got, you know, these beautiful pink snapper come up on my hooks, and I haven't been targeting them or anything, and I know that nobody's ordered them, but, you know, would you like them? And then so you get them and you do something with them, and it's awesome, and then you're starting to create that, you know, look at this fish.
Yeah.
There's more than one fish species that we have out there, you know, and it just works, man, you know. And it's while you're doing that, you're taking pressure off one another fish species, because you don't have that need to catch that extra 10 kilos because you've got 10 kilos of something else.
Yep.
But it's not called bycatch.
Yeah.
There shouldn't be like bycatchers throwing around out there, dude. And it's a miseducation for people. Like they're like, oh, yeah, but what about all the bycatch that you get? And I'm like, what is bycatch? Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist in the Gravity platform, because we're specifically targeting certain species of fish, and we always got a home for something if it's a little bit oddball.
Yeah.
And I have those customers, you know. Amersfield is epic. Every time we get something a little bit oddball, he's like, send it, bro. I'm going to do something with it. It's going to be awesome, you know. And that's that local support and that relationship that you build together over time, you know.
Yeah, I think relationship is the really key word there.
Yeah.
It is what it is. It's a two-way street. I'm going to diverge a little bit here because it came into my head when you're talking about other species and bycatch and all sorts of. Have you heard of the idea that there's no such thing as a fish?
I haven't heard of that, man. No.
It's the idea of how little understanding we have of the species of animals in the sea.
Right.
There are so many that just calling them fish isn't a good enough classification.
Yeah.
You know, it's that broad. Because, you know, if we think about on Earth and you go all the different families and genuses of animals and that, we just haven't done that with fish.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like that's part of the problem, right, as well, is this so much lack of understanding for all the other things that are out there that are edible, that are delicious, but they're not the five species that we always see in the supermarket.
Yeah, man.
And therefore they're scary and intimidating and all sorts of things like that. Is there, well, you know, the old school, back in the 60s, you walk into the butcher and the butcher goes, oh, I'm sold out of the prime cut, but here's what I have at home. This is the butcher's cut, and personally, I think this is the best. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is there some of that to when you're telling chefs about other varieties that you have? You know, if you pull up something different, you can pass that message on. Do you think getting that knowledge out as well of these other species will get away from bycatch or get away from lesser, whatever?
Yeah. Just,
here's this fish. This is what's good about it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, that. I mean, that's... it's a massive disconnect there with that species, you know, and that's another thing that we try and really, you know, educate on to a level where people understand that that's what we should be supporting.
Mm.
Because once you understand that, you're taking the pressure off another fish stock that's been hammered for years because it's easier to sell, and that's why those things are there.
Mm.
They were easier to sell. People knew what they were. They even changed the names of them. Like blue cod, for example, is actually a sand perch. It's a scientific makeup as a sand perch. They live on the sand.
Yeah.
But, you know, cod at the time globally was selling easy sell, so they turned it into, they changed the name of it and called it blue cod, so people understood it.
Mudfish and stargazer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Same deal, man. Yeah. So, but we have, you're right, we have so many fish species in our country, and they're equally as good as each other.
Mm.
And I do say to people, you know, like, hey, man, I've got these fish. They're really epic. Do you want to try them?
Yeah.
And generally I'll go to the person who's got the most, you know, Instagram stuff on, the, you know, pumping them out because it's valuable.
It sells that message.
Yeah. Because, and that's the beauty of social media, I think, with what I've learned and by marketing my brand, you know, it's, or myself basically, you go to the top to amplify to get to the right channels that need to make change, you know. So you go to the end user, you give them the information, and then they pass it on to their front of house, and front of house goes out and tells it to the customer.
Mm.
So it's a full circle, and it's educated from the right level. It's coming from the people who are on the water day in and day out, you know. So we see what goes on out there, and we see the abundance of other fish stocks. Then you get that issue of access. So if I don't have quota for that, we get charged deemed value, and it's what they set it at. So you get charged twice in a year. So you'll get your monthly harvest that comes out and it says, oh, Nate, you've caught 35 kilos of kingfish in Area 3 and you don't have quota for it. So our deemed value this year is going to be $16 a kilogram. And so you pay a fee there, and then after the 12 months of the quota year goes round, you pay another fee at the end of that. And it's just like this big whack of cash that you have to set aside to cover it because, well, that, you know, kingfish in particular, it's moving south.
Yeah.
Historically, there's no catch history for it. That's why there's such a small amount of quota allocated for it. So it's as rare as hen's teeth down there to get access to quota. But the fish stocks are starting to be abundant and their residents down there now, you know, in the last 5 years we've seen it happen. And whether that's global warming, whether that's whatever that is, they're here now and they're not going anywhere. So we need to adjust the system to cater for that so we're all not going out of business, because at $16 a kilo for deemed value, I'm not making much money on it, man, when I'm selling it for like 17. So there's only a buck in it for me, you know, and that's just that financial pressure that you find yourself under if you kind of slip on that, you know. So you don't necessarily go out of your way to catch those species, but it happens. And with those rules, you can't return it to the sea.
Mm.
They don't come under the right schedule act or whatever it is in the book, you know. I'm not familiar with it. I'm not interested in it, but that's what it is. They always refer to it, you know. Yeah. It's like their Bible, I guess. And with each one, that's legislation that goes with it. And bugger all's changed in the last 30-odd years, man.
Yeah.
Like, bugger all has changed within that system, and that's why it needs to change. Because times are changing, man. You know, like I said, we're getting fish stocks in an area we've never had before.
So climate change in the fishing industry?
Absolutely, man.
What's the picture with that? Where we're at?
Yeah, so I've been having a few conversations with NIWA just to build my understanding so that I can educate better, because I feel responsible for it, right? So there's not a lot known about that stuff, and that's so what I've done recently is I've offered the Gravity as a platform for research. So we're just waiting to hear back, but what that looks like is we would like to go and tag some kingfish and then try and get some data back if they're caught again and see, you know, where they're going, what they're up to and all that sort of stuff. So because there's nothing being done about it right now, and when that happens, I'm like, well, this is an opportunity for us to lead the way in something.
Yep.
And that's what we've got. And same deal with, you know, we're moving into food tourism now and we're still focusing on seasonality. So there's going to be a period of time that I am going to be fishing on the Fiordland coast. So we've applied for resource consent to have a concession to operate out of Fiordland and take people in there and experience. And part of that platform that we're putting together is I've offered MPI a space to come, again, use Gravity as a platform for southern bluefin tuna research.
Yeah.
So it's just like there isn't a lot known in that space. And I did, you know, I asked the right questions to figure out what was being researched.
Yeah.
And so it's really just like a small voluntary team from region to region that has a specific job to do, you know, whether it's fish stock management or you know, there's a guy down home and his main objective is to do blue cod biofisheries management and the population of the Taharoa on the beach at Aridi. And that's his thing. But that's like, it's not government funded, but that's where I think we probably could be changing the way there. Because the guys out there on the water are the ones with the knowledge.
Yeah.
Because, you know, NIWA are doing their own thing. So fisheries management isn't their thing, you know, like MPIs is and FishServe is. But, you know, there's just nothing in the middle there that kind of connects it all together. And so it is up to us fishers to ask the right questions and to go over and above to educate, because there is no knowledge or history around it, right?
Yeah. And that's, yeah, that stewardship.
Yeah.
Sort of
absolutely
part of it. You touched on it just there, the Gravity experience.
Yeah, man. I mean, we've you know, 2020, it's
2020 it's, vision has got a whole different meaning.
You know, like the word's been thrown around this year is the year of the pivot, but all we did was kind of do a bit of a shimmy because of what we pulled back on with Gravity. So we still want to educate, and what better way to educate than to get your classroom out there on the water with you and to get them under the water as well and show them the ecosystem that we're working from. But yeah, the Gravity experience, man, it's a good thing. Well, basically all we did was just again use those relationships that we've developed over time. I mean, the kind of the thing that prompted the Gravity experience was the fact that, you know, COVID happened and people were losing their jobs, man. the high-end lodge business kind of shut down overnight with a lot of other businesses. And so those guys, you know, were like, well, we're free. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And then we kind of just got chatting and we were just like, put this thing together. And then here we are. It just was like, came out on a plate. And we were like, whoa, this thing is epic, you know. For every aspect of what we're doing and what we believe in with Gravity, it's the same thing. We flow it on into the food tourism scene, you know, by educating and only taking what you need.
Yeah.
So giving people the option for their menu. What would you like to have tonight? Oh, we'd like some power. Okay, cool. Let's go get a couple of power. And then I bring it back and they give it to the chef and then the chef does his thing. And so you get that connection and you feel that intimacy that's going on within the setup.
Mm.
And you are witnessing and feeling authenticity. And then you go and taste it.
Yeah.
And it's like, poof, the whole thing works.
Yeah.
And then you understand it. And by going down this route with food tourism and charter operations, I don't have to worry about QMS.
Yeah.
I don't have to have, true, like, I fill out one form each month via this platform for food tourism.
Yeah.
And it's epic. Yeah. It's easy and it's the way that it should be.
Mm.
And that's what I think fisheries management should be like. It should be easy. You know, there's a number of reasons why it's not easy and why it's working for some. But, yeah, it's a touchy subject, really, because there's just so little known. Like, the general public just don't know enough.
Yeah.
You know? And then you kind of ask yourself the question, are they actually interested in? And I think that people are starting to become more interested.
I almost want to say that starting is the wrong term.
Yeah.
People have been. It's just that as the way information is available changes, people are beginning to realize all the things that they haven't been able to know.
Yeah.
You don't look for what you don't know is there,
yeah,
in exactly, general.
Yeah.
So until this becomes spoken about and alerted, I spoke on a panel about sustainability and one of the things that they wanted us to talk about was the generational change and the thought of sustainability. I don't think that there is a generational change. It's a generational education has changed. The people that know what's going on are aware and alerted to it and are seeing a broader range of things are the younger generation because of the way that information is coming in and the information hasn't been as readily available to everyone.
Yeah, so true, man.
As soon as you start speaking to any generation of people about things like sustainability or where their food comes in and things like that, everyone has very similar thoughts, probably apart from the people that are making millions of dollars from the way it currently is.
Exactly. That's it. They're disconnected from it.
Mm.
You know, they don't have that feeling for it.
Yeah.
It is just a ways and means to get to where they are. But yeah, like sustainability is thrown around and like it's something that I feel very strongly about sustainability. Sustainability starts at the bottom. Mm. It doesn't start at the top.
Yeah.
And sustainability is regulated by yourself, not by anybody else. But, you know, if you're not listening to the wild fish stocks, you're not doing things in a sustainable manner. That's yeah. it. Like, that's the long and short of it. If you just keep fishing and taking out and extracting, it's depleting a fish stock even further to the point where do we have that fishery anymore? You know, we're seeing it globally. You know, David Attenborough is really good at educating. He's just, you're captivated by what he says. But what he's saying is, you know, during these periods of time, we're losing all of these things on our planet, you know, and I just don't think that we should be doing things the way that we have because it's not working for our wild scene.
Yeah.
And if it's not working for our wild scene, then are we truly being sustainable and honoring that resource? And I don't think we are. So, you know, that's what we're about at Gravity is if we can see something happening out there on the water, then the very next day it's not going to be available. And that's what happens with us. I know roughly when they're going to go into season, the fish. And as soon as I get one that's got, like, you know, an exec or whatever, that's it. We pull pin and we'll come back next year.
Mm.
And Troy and Claire are really good at doing that too. I mean, they've just shut down. And this is what needs to happen.
Yeah.
More of this chat, more of what we are actually doing out there and getting it to the right channels and educating people further. It's imperative right now, more than ever.
I know you've got some cool ideas. And not just ideas, actually. You've got a plan about how things can be done better now.
Yeah.
Can you give us a quick summation of that?
Yeah. So what it looks like is, yeah, the five main things that you need that is gravity fishing. So if you were a current fisher, what I'm trying to do is pull your regional fishers together and have a bit of a chat and sit down with them and ascertain whether they want to be part of this platform and go straight direct to them, to the end user. And then if they do, then we'll provide infrastructure for them. So what it looks like is a 20-foot container, basically, with a chiller unit in it, all certified. And I'm trying to do it, you know, so that it's a mobile packing facility so that you can kind of just tow it onto site. And if it doesn't work, you can tow it somewhere else and take it to another region or whatever.
Yep.
But yeah, that's what it looks like. And it's easier to achieve because I understand how it works. And that's kind of what I'm trying to give to people is the education that I've learned from my journey with Gravity and give people that access. And so, yeah, that's all it is really, is getting a certified packing facility, getting them access to quota so that they can go and fish and getting access to the market and letting them do their thing, you know. So it would kind of be, I guess, the initial setup. I'm there and I'll help you get it off the ground, and I am like 100% confident that I can walk away from that. And if these people are passionate enough and I've seen that there are people coming out of the woodwork, then I know it's going to work for them, you know. And that's what that is. It's giving back to your regional community. And then from there, you start to create job opportunity within that space. Because I still think that we do need to be doing whole fish.
Yeah.
And that's where you guys come in, and that's where you do such an epic job. It's like, look what we're doing with this whole fish.
Yeah.
You know, the days of just having fillets is done. You know, I have this conversation so many times about the waste that goes into it. And that's what I mean. Like, regulation within QMS has good points. When they start to see things like that happening, we can make a change.
Yeah.
But yeah, that infrastructure is the most important part, and it won't take that long to get certified either, you know.
Yeah, so that's a question I have there with that packing facility. Is that the sort of thing that can be designed, registered with MPI and built to those specs, and then MPI goes, oh yeah, it's one of those?
Yep.
Tick.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where we've gone down that road via MPI.
Mm.
So it's through the Sustainable Foods and Fibres Fund. And that's kind of where we're working in that space at the moment. And, you know, they want me to write out big emails and stuff explaining what it is. But I'm kind of a little bit wary, and I kind of like to do things personally and go and have a sit down and a bit of a chat, because all my email response is going to look like is, I want to replicate the Gravity fishing model, full stop.
Yep.
It's simple. You know, I like to keep things simple because the rest of it is pretty complicated.
I think that, I'm going to go broader here, but I think that is the model for farming as well,
yep. You know,
portable abattoir, chook wagons, egg mobiles and things like that are being called. Like, having these open source packets of information so people who give a fuck have the knowledge and don't have to deal with it as much of the bureaucracy, because that's really difficult.
Yeah.
To be able to have this positive impact.
Yeah, exactly,
primary,
man.
Industry, food sources.
Yeah, totally. And that's it. And you're giving that power back to those owner-operated facilities.
Mm.
And you're empowering your community, you know. You're making a food resource available to them at an affordable price, because it doesn't cost you much to go and catch it. So you don't have to drive the price up. Like, my price lists are based on what it costs me to catch and run my operation. You know, there's, I think there's four organizations that I have to go through to be a commercial fisherman. Mm. You know, like Maritime New Zealand, FishServe, Finns, MPI.
Yeah.
You know, that's just to name a few off the top of my head. So there's so many layers to it, and that's what the Gravity fishing model is a really super watered down version that anybody can pick up and run with. And I mean, like, I'm giving you customers.
Yeah.
I'm not going to like go, here you go, guys. Sweet, I'm away back down south. I'm literally giving you customers that I've been supplying myself, because I've pulled back to focus on my region. And all those customers still exist. So it's like, you know, there's a bit of an issue in Nelson and Marlborough about getting seafood up there. And, you know, the guys I've been supplying and the women I've been supplying up there, they're just like, Nate, if you pull back, where are we going to get our fish from? And I'm like, just go back to where you were getting it from before me. And they're like, that was like 3 years ago, dude. We don't have that connection anymore, nor do we support that setup because of the education you've given us. And it was just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I've got to help these people, man, you know. And that's what it was. And it evolved. I was like, okay, I need to make this space and create this access, and it'll snowball, and it's lots of little, and lots of little provides lots of little jobs for people within community. And so you're sustaining your community. by doing this. Mm. And yeah, it goes across every primary industry sector, man. You know, it's food production.
Yeah. All of this. Because you are allowed to sell fish from
your
boat.
Yeah, so legally, anybody in the country with a registered fishing permit in the commercial space is legally allowed to sell 10 kilos of boneless fillets as long as it's not to the same person within 24 hours. And you have to go and buy it off the boat. So only 10 kilos per day.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, that's not viable.
It's not viable. But whereas if it was like, okay, you can sell 100 kilos to the public off your boat, then we've got a solution.
Mm.
That's what it is. And then you can go down and pick and choose off whatever that boat is, man, you know.
Yeah.
And then build that relationship. Yeah. It's like, you know, people used to have butchers in towns and we used to go and yarn to them, like you said, you know. Yeah. And you can go and make a change in there if you need to, you know. Because you're the customer.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is. It's easy to make accessible. And it should be more accessible. And that's kind of what we're trying to do, is give people their fish back.
Yeah.
Because I don't own it. None of us own it. But we live in this country and it's a food resource.
Mm. So people that want to find out more about the Gravity Experience, where can they look?
Yeah, man. It's just on our website. It's just gravityfishing.co.nz. And then it's just a couple of links that you click on. It's quite clear cut. Just jump on there, hit the Gravity Experience, and it'll take you through to our different options that we have. And yeah, that's pretty much the only outlet we've got. We're not trying to make it a massive business or nothing. It's more of another ways and means to educate, but kind of in a more relaxed way. You know, it's cool. Yeah. Feels good.
Cool. Nate, you're awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries, man. Honestly, pleasure to be in here and having a chat with you guys. It's awesome. Love what you guys do.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for taking the time to listen to us today. Check out honeycomb.co.nz for information and links relating to this episode. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you'll never miss an episode.